This hour is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
The Bernstein and Holmes Show.
It's okay to be excited. I don't want anyone to be less excited about Caleb.
It's just not a comfortable place to be. Because we're all putting ourselves out there again, right?
Yes!
We're agreeing to do this.
No question about it. I am ready to get hurt again.
I hate it. It'll be the end of the first quarter, and it's going to say passer rating 26.2. And we're all going to be like, you know what I mean?
You're getting dangerously close to the uniform is cursed, Dan, which is so against you.
This is part of my problem. Studs?
Why are you yelling at me?
Let's go to Bob in Joliet. Hi, Bob. You're on the score.
I'm going to make a few, you know, like comments and statements, and then I'll ask you a couple questions at the end. What game do you believe Tyson Bagent will replace Caleb Williams for performance reasons, not for injuries?
Bob.
What?
I'm just glad that Mark Grody was a guest on the Bob Show last night.
I just thought it was great that you could hear Grody. His first sound that he made was, okay.
You can actually pinpoint the second when his heart rips in half.
Like comments and statements, and then I'll ask you a couple.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 a.m. till 2 on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Yeah, that uh-oh said it all. Wow. We're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Hello, happy Wednesday. Bernstein, Holmes, Rahimi, all here for you. We've got Ray Diaz, Adam Studzinski, Brandon Fryer, Connor O'Donnell, Kevin Lapka doing their things, and we're going to be talking a lot of football, a little bit of baseball, and checking in on the old bingo card. As far as I can tell, we got a couple shots at bingo, but still not there yet. Still not there yet. So, how's everybody doing? Hey, how are you? You good?
Yes.
I'm good. Yeah.
Lawrence, I'll see you later.
Yes.
Are you guys on the same flight?
Yeah,
we always get
the Southwest shuttle.
Ah, because Ray and I are on the same flight.
Guys, I clocked in at exactly about 23:50 before my flight. B-17. What's up, Southwest? I fly enough with you guys per year. The heck is that?
You won't have to worry about it.
I mean, they're getting ready to get rid of that, so.
I don't
care.
At
least that was the report, is that they're getting ready to get rid of that.
If I'm still mad about it, and I'm
I'll try and save you a seat in the exit row.
Oh, is this where somebody complains again because you saved me a seat?
Yes.
It's okay.
Wait, again?
Oh, yeah. We had this.
Yeah, it happened the last time we went to Vegas.
Oh, yeah, we had this weird texter who was really mad about it and then was like, I would have talked sports to you the whole time. And I'm like,
no,
I don't necessarily know that you're thinking about the other person there.
So as I have it on the bingo card.
I sleep and I wear a mask so nobody talks to me and I drool so they can't see it. It's great.
Oh, thank you for reminding me. Sleep mask. I got to bring my mask. Thank you.
I ain't doing that plain air. Mm-mm.
So Bears dubious QB history got circled on mine from the most recent. And the question I have is a ruling. We saw Staley doing his butt scoot. Doing his I have to express my glands move. And that's the picture we have on the bingo card. Yet technically we said Staley interacting with fans.
Doesn't count.
I think if he's doing the butt scoot though, I feel like that's like prime Staley.
That's what I mean. It's actually the picture of him on the card doing his move, and they showed him doing his move.
But we specifically said interacting with
fans. I know, but the picture is of him.
That's just a picture that Lapka chose because it's a good picture. The card says interacting with fans. He was not interacting with fans.
Okay, well, that's very much.
Unless you count the grass as a fan.
Who was he interacting with? That's for the fans.
Yeah, he's putting on a show for the fans.
But when I brought up in the previous episode, he was doing the Hulk Hogan, let me hear you, to the fans, it didn't count.
Okay.
I think he's got
See, if I'd have been here, I'd have said that should count.
Oh,
because yeah, that is interacting with the fans.
I think that was episode one, and you were here, Studs, actually.
Oh, well,
now that I think about it, it wasn't
right,
episode
brother.
Two.
Last 2 weeks have been a blur.
He was really into Madden at that point.
And the other question I have is during the Open, they do make like oblique reference to the Bears' defensive tradition. They became the monsters of the Midway and this sort of thing. And they show some of that. So if we got the Staley and accepted that Bears defensive tradition, that's a bingo.
What about the Bear weather, too? That was kind of brought up.
It's not on here.
Oh, that was one of my submissions, I think.
Yeah, I think that was on our next list of things. So I'm just making sure that we're all on the same literal page here with that. You guys,
I thought it was a much better episode last night.
You liked it a lot more than I did. It could have been great. It could have been great. And it just...
What kept it from being great?
Had they give me more draft room, more of those discussions about the Judon thing? And it's,
I mean, they went pretty in depth, Dan.
It's only
on
a couple minutes, and everything else was Travis Bagent screaming and the Eberflus daughters, and I don't know where any of that goes. I love the football stuff, and you know what I realized it's missing. Have we yet gotten, correct me if I'm wrong, but have we gotten the coaches around the table talking about players? It's a staple of Hard Knocks.
I don't think we have.
Yes. We haven't gotten, we've gotten the running back coach talking about players.
We
gotten
have,
a little bit of that, and we got Shane Waldron a little bit.
Yeah, we have Ian Cunningham and like Ryan Poles talking about players.
But you know the shot I mean? Like, yeah. They're all sitting at the end of the day. They're all coming together after a practice, and they're all tired, and the guy, you know, guys got their spit cups or whatever, and they're actually talking about, you know, the roster, talking about players, talking about who's doing what. We haven't, I don't know. I would say more football and less filler, and it could be really good.
I thought that they gave you a lot more football yesterday, and I thought it was the best episode easily in the first 5 minutes. In just you seeing Eberflus talk with Caleb about how the games have gone, how the practices go, them giving you that much access to what they were thinking on Judon, and letting you know like how they evaluated it, and telling you the reason that we didn't make this move is because he wouldn't sign an extension with us. Like, that's, to me, like, that was a very much a nod to what we saw with Hard Knocks with the Giants,
mm-hmm.
where we got to see how they discuss things literally at the highest level with Ryan Poles sitting there with Kevin Warren talking about it, with all of the people on the pro personnel side discussing it with him. I thought it was a really good episode last night.
That's how I felt, but I also feel like if you're watching Bears Hard Knocks and you don't live here and you don't know how the Bears operate, you're probably not that into it. But after what I thought was a fairly content poor episode last week, we did get more. I thought the same thing, Lawrence, about the Giants nod when it came to Judon. I thought that was pretty important when it came to why they didn't talk about him, and even also just the process when it came to the third round draft pick. And then we saw what ultimately happened, that it ended up being the price. But that, where they were talking about the exchange for how many years they got with Austin Booker, like that's the most transparent I've seen the Bears about any transaction, even more so than what we saw in the discussion with Ryan Poles and Peter King, you know, talking mm-hmm. about the first overall pick. I feel like this was at least real time somewhat, where you're seeing some sort of thought process as to how they're prioritizing.
There are a couple comments by Poles that stuck with me. One is, we're just sort of offhandedly, who was he talking to? Is it Matt Feinstein? Is that the director of football administration?
I know they have two directors of player personnel, we found out in that.
Yeah, I think,
was it the guy with the mustache?
I think it was the guy who was just wearing a sweatshirt and shorts. I think it was Matt Feinstein, who that's not Ruthie Polinsky's husband, is it? That's not, okay, because I know that there's one of the guys that works there. But he said, Poles said something like, if he gets 20 sacks, I'm going to be sick.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of admission, that was cool. And the other thing, right after they solidified the Booker pick, when he said, like, I know him and his family well. You're going to like him. He's going to be good. Like, that moment of self-confidence, almost saying it to himself, but saying it to everybody else, that's kind of a cool thing. To hear that in the moment. No one had ever really seen the guy before, and he's like, all right, this is good. You're going to like him. As if to say, I know I just gave up a fourth-round pick, a future fourth, but it's going to be worth it.
I will say this. Did you guys hear Biggs this morning talking about Austin Booker? Biggs said that he had collected a form of consensus, and some people really liked him, and then other people on other teams didn't want anything to do mm-hmm. with him. So that seems like a very wide pendulum swing there.
That's what Dane Brugler told us.
That's what a lot of people thought, that he would be someone that would be drafted high next year.
Which makes sense. I mean, I like it. I like the transaction that they got for him. I just worry when you're talking about Judon, for example, versus Austin Booker, I hope that comparison works out the way you want it to.
Well, what was the stat that he gave?
It may have been worth the risk for the Bears to go ahead and make the Judon move. But, I mean, I understand because they've done so well overall with trades and they actually have capital, it might have made sense depending on what you think your goals are. And whether you think your goals are attainable in year one of Caleb.
When he was explaining, it was with Kevin Warren, I think, when he said that they had Judon ranked 50th in wins added for this season. You know, they showed the outside of the prepared packet that the analytics people put together. And he said, by comparison, that Sweat was 14th. Is that right? So if you figure there's two starting defensive ends on every team, that gives you 60. And if Judon is 50th by their rankings, okay. That's a bottom level starting defensive end. And I just found it. Is that a proprietary number that they use, or is that available to us, the idea of WAR, basically?
I think it's their metrics. And if my biggest indication of that is just, again, things that they've talked about where they didn't pan out like they wanted, how they see it. I know they go off of relative athletic score a lot when it comes to scouting, but they favor that almost more than actual on-field production when it comes to college players, I would say more than almost. But when it comes to their rubric, I'm still waiting for it to come through more.
See, if they are able to take some of the threads of the football-y stuff and continue more of that, I'll be, if there's two episodes left.
Yes.
Okay.
So the next one will probably be about cuts.
Has to be, right?
Yeah, but they don't show the cuts anymore, right?
But they can react to the cuts.
I wonder if they're going to pick up the Colin Johnson thread. You know, he had the good game. They go to the coffee shop with him. And now that's just kind of dropped for now in favor of the punter's Australian.
I mean, they had to get to that at some point. Like, that had to be one of the storylines.
It was interesting they had him driving, and I didn't know where that was leading, quite literally. I thought he was going to get lost or something. But then he's like, he's driving in a car, and now he's at the game.
He did get lost. He had to ask for directions.
He said Michigan to the guy who said Michigan Avenue. But that was a guy there, though.
I thought he was learning. Didn't know where to park. Yeah.
No, I thought he was literally asking, like, where do I turn to somebody on the street?
No, that was one of the traffic guys.
There was two scenes. There was a scene right before that.
I thought they were both traffic people.
Okay.
Also, Cairo Santos hazing him or giving him a little bit of hell about, do you know how to drive, was pretty funny in my opinion.
Yeah, especially considering another international player.
I do think that if you're not going to give the typical Hard Knock stuff, I have no problem with Tyson Bajan, who clearly gets the bit, right? And then his dad being the bit. I have no problem with that being on TV. Like, to me, if you're not going to get the storylines that you desire, like, let the guy who really wants to be part of the story and Mr. Bajan be that dude.
Yeah, I thought it was the perfect amount of Travis Bagent.
For me, the perfect amount's none.
Did you guys not notice the part where Tyson Bagent said he had to buy 81 tickets?
At $100 a piece.
He doesn't make enough money for that.
No, that's a lot.
For a preseason game?
You have that many people? I don't even know 81 people.
Like, he's going to probably start, right? Like, you're going to have to start in a game. How much are you paying for tickets then? How many are you buying? I need to know the answers to these things.
I mean, there could have been, he could have promised this out to maybe like an organization, or although I guess they probably would have put a spotlight on that if that was the case. Like, it could have been his church. You know what I mean? Like, there could be the reason why there were so many, because that seems like and maybe it was easier than being like, look, I don't know if I can get you into some regular season games. So let's just knock out everyone comes to Chicago for the game that I'm probably going to play the most in, and then everyone could go back to West Virginia and be cool.
I will say, did you guys notice the guy who had the legit mohawk? Like, not the faux hawk. He had a whole mohawk next to Tyson Bagent's dad. Like, it was shaved on the sides with the actual strip. Like, it just wasn't fluffed up.
Yeah.
I'm like, who's that guy? I need to know more about this man.
I think Travis Bagent has people who, like, seems to have, like, big people in gray t-shirts who follow him around.
But okay, like, I completely understand that being on Hard Knocks. When I saw it based on what happened the episode before, I was like, perfect. This makes sense. He likes being on TV. You know, he's a, what seems like a fun-loving individual.
Yes. That's why, like, I thought it was fine. You have him on. He does the thing. He's an arm wrestler. You tell that story.
You're giving me the eye. You an arm wrestler? Okay.
I would have been very curious if Tyson Bagent talked about his Welsh granddad and tried to speak Welsh. That would have been the plot twist, that, because that seems like the hardest language of all time.
Plus, granddad was a fisherman. I'll give him that.
Yeah, and did you see how he illustrated his tattoo progress, mm-hmm. like the plane and then looking up the plane?
He was a pilot, and the quote of, like, I was born to fly or something like that, and he's got that quote on him. Okay, all good. And didn't he say, like, his family doesn't like tattoos? At first, I thought he said everyone in my family has tattoos. Then he's like, no one else in my family. Oh, okay, well, fine.
But then they grew to understand what he was doing.
He was doing some storytelling on his body.
Yep.
We just got an angry text about Matt Eberflus's daughters.
Well,
they were on for like 30 seconds. What's the problem? They're clearly there to support their dad.
I agree that it was superfluous. It doesn't do anything.
So what? It's Hard Knocks.
Right. Texter,
hey, you ever watch Hard Knocks before?
I don't know if you know this, but we're on the radio for 4 hours at a time, and I don't necessarily know that all of it is super important. I'm just throwing that out there.
And I also don't think Kevin Warren sitting at a table talking about where chairs go is and that was advertising the Soldier Field idea.
It's called Stadium.
And they consulted Lil Durk on that too, okay? So come on.
I don't think we got enough Lil Durk in this episode.
We did not.
Right? Like that, he's like, hey, have a good practice, takes pictures, then leaves. I'm like, what? Come on.
He said Chicago. To break down the huddle.
Yeah, I need more of that. Okay. I want more celebrities.
Shout out to Austin Reed.
And tell me about this Mohawk dude who's friends with the Bagents. I need to know.
When we return, Mark Grody will answer all those questions and more on The Score.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
There's
Mark Grody, covering the Bears for 670 The Score.
Can I get a couple minutes with you here, man?
Man, I ain't even talking today, man. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Mark Grody with Bernstein and Holmes.
You know, are you being chased by the lawnmower, Mark?
I'm actually trying to get away from him, yes.
Leave me alone, sir.
I'll get you, Grody.
Mark Grody.
Whatever, the Bears suck.
On The Score.
Dan and I just made plans to go to Saginaw's.
Yeah, I say
get a drink in the Circa limo.
I say we drink in the limo, I say we go to Saginaw's at some point before bed. We get pastrami and their homemade chips and a big bowl of matzo ball soup. And then,
pass out because I've gotten 0 hours of sleep.
No, not yet. Not yet. It's Vegas. They're pumping oxygen in there to keep us awake.
I
so,
need that, actually.
So I'm gonna bring my lactase pills. So
Dan is in for a big
yeah,
night.
Yep. And if I'm bringing the lactase, because then we're going over and we're getting the Fruity Pebbles. Not Fruity Pebbles, the Captain Crunch Crunch Berry Shakes.
All right, so I'm running for 2 hours on the treadmill when I land, and then I'll figure this out.
No, you get your walking and you carry your bag around. It's fine.
Nope,
we're all good.
Nope.
That's a plan. That's a plan.
Okay.
Now let's talk to Mark Grody. Is that what we're doing? Cool.
Is he here?
I don't know. Yeah.
I'm here. I'm hanging out with you guys.
What'd you do to Bob last night? You gave Bob short shrift.
I just didn't have time for Bob last night. I went on the show last night thinking I had a full hour, and then because I looked at the schedule incorrectly, and then I learned that the show was only like 20 minutes. So I was like, oh my God. And I was like, I had asked for calls, and the calls came running. I'm like, man, oh man. And then Bob, of course, was the first call. And I just didn't have it in me. I put Bob on hold, and I didn't have time to come back to him. It was a one-game suspension for Bob. Let's put it that way.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Good. Smart move on your part.
Yeah.
I love
so, Groats, what did you think of Eberflus saying, look, we've seen all that we need to see from our starters. Let's get ready for week one.
I would have preferred to have seen them out there for a series or two. I guess that the answer to that is we have to – well, no, nobody has to trust him, but I guess you have to go with the plan that they have, and that is that they – obviously they're out here practicing today, which was not initially on the schedule, and I think this is the reason, this practice city is the reason that the starters will not play tomorrow, that they feel like they can get a little better work in right now. I just hope that they are diligent and intense in whatever work they do in practice leading up to it, and that the ramp up remains intense. And I guess we'll see. It'll be interesting to see who all plays tomorrow night, which starters actually will get in. I'm actually looking out at the field right now on 64 check. And yeah, Nate Davis is out there again. So I guess that's good news. Oh, and by the way, before I forget to mention it, sight seen out here at practice for the first time in a long time. And I wasn't out here yesterday, but Jaquan Brisker seems to. I've spotted number 9 on the far field as I'm talking to you guys.
Maybe he'll play.
Maybe. But, I mean, Jaquan Brisker, and there's a topic about this every year, about Jaquan Brisker, really good player, but does he put himself in too much danger? And we know that he's been prone to injury and concussion and things like that. So honestly, like he could probably use the work, use the time, but I would not play Brisker. I would not play Brisker.
See, that's where I sit with this preseason game, though, is you do have a big gap, partially because it's on a Thursday, partially because of the next Sunday being the 8th. I do think some of these starters should play based on the fact that they haven't gotten at least 43 snaps like Caleb Williams has, for example.
Yeah, and it crushed them last year. I mean, and I do think that they've been very cognizant of what happened last year, the 0-4 start to the season and the light work during preseason and how and to some degree I understand that when a guy has the slightest injury in its training camp and his practice, get him out of there. But last year,
it's also a causality reach. The amount of presumption in there of the post hoc ergo propter hoc that saying that they were bad because I don't buy it. I don't buy it. It's too facile.
You don't buy it because
there's no reason to. There's no logical reason to presume that they were 0-4 because they didn't play enough in the preseason. They might have just been bad.
No, that's absolutely true. I mean, I don't think you assume it, but I think that you absolutely put it in as a factor. I mean, they came out last year, Dan, in the first game like they didn't even have training camp. So how could that not have?
They might have done it anyway.
A part of it.
I don't know. There were communication issues. Like, you could tell that they were playing together.
Well, yeah. And I think, so. Like, they're just like, this. I mean, this training camp has been very different, and they have even said, or at least indicated, that part of the problem last year was that they just weren't ready going into the season. That there were what, 18 guys, I think, in the week before the first game that were on the injury list last year, and it's because, like, with an abundance of caution. And then, you know, the season starts and they're all active, and then they're bad for four games. So while, of course, it's not everything, because that would be like, then you're saying, oh, the talent was great, and we all know it wasn't great last year. But absolutely, I think it has something to do with it. For all NFL teams, the way they conduct their camps these days, the NFL always sucks in the first few weeks. I disagree. I think that it's definitely a factor, not all of it, but a factor for sure.
No, Andy Reid doesn't care.
Well, Andy Reid's got Patrick Mahomes, and he can play those games. You know what I mean? Like, other teams don't have that elite quarterback, don't have the GOAT on their team, so he can do a lot of things differently than other teams can do.
So, Groats, with Jaquan Brisker, I think that you're right. I think that his style of play might lend to him not being out there. I'd love to know who's on your list of people this week that you're like, okay, like, here's your opportunity. How can you make the team?
I'm really curious about some of these defensive linemen that we have seen thrive. Like, and I'm not just talking about, like, we know Austin Booker's going to make the team, but I've enjoyed the hell out of watching him. Daniel Hardy has done nothing but make plays. Does that add up for him? I'm still very much zeroing in on Zach Pickens. He'll make the team too. Obviously, this is second year, third round pick, but I want to know if he's going to make the jump. And then some of these other guys too, like linebacker, Micah Baskerville, one of your guys, coming up with the big interception in the second preseason game. And then, you know, Amen Ogbog Bamiga doing what he did last week. Like, some of these peripheral guys, I'm definitely looking forward to watching. And then running backs too. Like, I feel like that's been one of the little themes throughout this whole camp is Khalil Herbert going to make the team? Is Roshan healthy? Is he ready to be the backup quarterback to DeAndre Swift? Is this Velus Jones Jr.? Does it have any kind of leg? So I'll be interested to see who's running the ball still in the third and fourth quarters for the Bears, tomorrow night.
This may be a little in the weeds, Mark, but I know we've talked about position battles, for example, at wideout or receiver, whichever you prefer. We just talked about another one. I'm still trying to also figure out how many tight ends they want to carry.
Yeah, no, it's going to be really interesting because you have obviously the two primary tight ends in Cole Kmet and Gerald Everett. And then I know that they would have brought back Mercedes Lewis if they weren't going to keep him on this roster. And there's a couple of the younger guys, too, that have thrived so far. Mercedes Lewis, look, is an extra offensive lineman, essentially. So, and I think that you definitely want that going into the season. So my guess is three or four at this point, Layla, but I don't have a total handle on that at this moment.
And that's the blasting game question that we talked about yesterday, too. That all factors in when you start talking about who's doing what on special teams and who's contributing what with some level of versatility.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Like, Kari Blaskin just keeps coming back for more. And I think in the third training camp with him, he always is – I always feel like they're trying to – and I guess this is all NFL teams with fullbacks these days. I feel like they're always trying to figure out exactly – how much they want to use Kari Blassingham. I remember last year in camp, them going downfield to Blassingham at one point in time with a pass. It might have been a scramble drill, but he was downfield nonetheless. He's caught a couple passes here. Like, in other words, he's been very present during these practices. But then once the regular season starts, you're like, where did Kari Blassen game go? So it just feels like that position is such a conundrum for offensive coordinators. And I think Shane Waldron ultimately will have a lot of say in what the role is, if anything, for Kari Blassen game this year.
Speaking of Shane Waldron, now that you've seen him after a couple of games and you've listened to him talk offense, what have been your impressions of him?
Yeah, so far so good. I like that he's pretty straightforward. I mean, this is a guy who, like, just personality-wise, he's a little shy when he speaks to us. He's not a bombastic personality. He's not a yeller. He's not loud or anything like that. And we just want a little bit of transparency when it comes to the questions that we ask of offensive coordinators in general, because we know there's only so much they can say about what exactly happened. But I think so far, I think he's done a pretty good job of being honest with us and letting us know what's going on. And I've liked the things that I've seen from Waldron so far in terms of adjusting in games. And I think the biggest thing that we've seen is just the way he has catered his play calling exactly to Caleb Williams. And we've heard coaches and offensive coordinators with the Bears of the past say that and then take a long time to actually get there. It took a long time for the Bears to say, Mitch Trubisky only gets half the field. You know, it took a long time for anybody to figure out how to use Justin Fields, if they ever did. And now, right from the start, they are doing what they are saying they are doing, and that is to make this quarterback, number 18, Caleb Williams, I'm looking at right now as the two teams start to, or the two sides huddle up for 7-on-7 right now, to make Caleb Williams as comfortable as possible, and so far so good.
Hey, Groats, what happened with you and Jason Leisure? I think Studs has it here that there was a bit of a conflict in the way you guys were trying to ask a question. It sounded a little like this.
When you talk about Caleb's ability to understand.
Okay. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, okay, I guess Leisure's just gonna trample all over me here. What happened?
Yeah, I was a little irritated at that moment. I mean, we get over it, and I still love LL. I still love Leisure. But, you know, he's sitting right in the front there, right in front of the coach. He'd had a few questions already, and I had already gotten interrupted, so I was going to go through with that question as long as I could, as I possibly could. And, yeah, I was a little put off by the end of it. But it happens. Those are the wars we deal with here. As Lawrence calls it, it's the City Hall of Sports, you know? I mean, can't always get all of our questions in. But, yeah, I was a little pissed at that moment, not going to lie. Brody gets pissed.
Ooh, just like you did with Nate Davis. The fire and passion is coming out. I like it.
That's right.
Threw my arms up. You know, Jason, it's all good now. I haven't even said anything to him. It's all good. But, you know, that's the heat of the moment stuff. That's what we do out here, heat of the moment.
I overreact all the time. I completely understand. That was an appropriate reaction.
He'll fight you.
Yeah,
be ready.
Yeah. I overreact.
He'll fight you.
I'll overreact and remember the time I misspoke, like, for the next 7 days. It's going to happen.
They should arm wrestle, I think, to settle it.
Yes, arm wrestle to settle it.
Oh, yeah. Well, we had plenty of arm wrestling last night, didn't we?
Yep. Thanks, Groats. Appreciate it, man.
Always a pleasure, guys.
Bye. Bears training camp coverage presented by ChevyDriveChicago.com and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Well, let's hear from Ed Eberflus when we come back, talking about his rationale for making the decisions that he is regarding who plays tomorrow and who doesn't. That's next. Bernstein, Holmes, Rahimi on The Score.
Dan Bernstein, Lawrence Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
How do you guys as a defense stay sharp, knowing that you're probably not playing in Kansas City, but you've got 3 weeks left?
Who said we're not playing in Kansas City? That's what they said.
Okay. Got to find out somehow. Sometimes you find out from reporters. That's Tez, the Tez Effect, the Beast, Montez Sweat. He's got so many nicknames. And I guess Matt Eberflus is able to just, you know, wield the magic scepter and keep dubbing you with various nicknames whenever he wants. You can change them at any time. Herbie the Love Bug. Okay. Who is that? Who is Herbie the Love Bug? Did he say?
Did you know that what player that was?
I didn't.
Was it Khalil Herbert?
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
Oh.
Hey, you guys can ask Matty Refluse all about his nicknaming on Friday, 12:25.
I got a lot of questions for him. A lot of questions. Most of them are stemming from this recent Hard Knocks episode. Some are not, but most of them are. The nickname
what from
thing,
the recent Hard Knocks thing has got you wanting to ask Flucy about.
Ooh, well, first of all, Lawrence, let me tell you, I'm on my last page of my notebook. So that's a new chapter has to begin soon. I think number one, did you hear him talk about the 48-hour preparation?
Yes.
I'm like, what is that? I need to know more about this. When you say that, what do you mean? I think additionally, I do like that his daughters are in the show because I'm a woman who talks about football. So I would like to ask him about that. The origins of the glow up. I thought that was pretty neat. I'm trying to think of what else that I have for him. I have a separate list. And then I think also, to me, just who he thinks he is this year based on who he was when he started this job. Like, that's a big one for me.
Yeah, I have a question that's kind of parallel to that, that last one that you mentioned that I want to talk with him through. Because I think that he made a connection with this team when he started calling plays again.
And I also think I would like to explore the balance between being in the weeds like that and being a capable enough CEO.
And Kevin Fishbane wrote a great article talking about Eberflus's happiness of going over tape with players and the teaching aspects. And I also think that that is something that we can build on and discuss with him because, again, these are all things that are really good and we haven't really gotten to see them much ourselves until recently. So I feel like all of that is I feel like all of that is worth discussing.
Yeah, the granular tackling stuff about securing the hamstring tackle, about which way to kind of gator roll in a direction of the line of scrimmage, that the physics of it were really interesting. And the way Fishbane described Eberflus getting in the stance and being, we've all been there. We've all been in a coach's office where they can't help themselves. It's what they do. And they start moving you around and say, well, you're over here and your head is here and you can't go over here until this person goes here. And that's because they're coaches. It's by nature.
And did you guys see the point where he's talking about where a foot needed to
yes.
be pointed in the tackle? Like, I thought that was... Again, this is stuff for us. Like, I know we like talking about this. We find this interesting, but I just wonder how much a typical Hard Knocks viewer does. I can't separate it right now because I love that minutia. I needed to figure out who this team is.
Yeah, and it also gives you a glimpse into the mind of how important some of the technique stuff is, where often, like, we're able to talk about it when we're talking about, like, a receiver where the cut is at 12 and a half, not at 13. And the difference, that half yard doesn't seem like it makes a world of difference, but considering the timing mechanism of the play, it could make the difference between a catch out of bounds for a first down or a pick six going the other way. So learning like what some of those small things are, I think is a great thing.
Oh, it's like what Olin Krutz does often when he breaks down offensive line play or gives you some video tips on Twitter where he'll say, look at where this guard's head is
mm-hmm.
on this zone block, or look at what the center is being asked to do to come across a gap and reach block, and showing you that if this is ill-timed, everything breaks down.
Well, and also go back to the tape where, unfortunately, you know, they get eaten up by Cleveland in the fourth quarter. But he says, well, there's supposed to be an interception on that play. That brain we got to see in this last episode, like why he's saying that. You saw he like called for the interception and he knew what would happen if everybody was in their spots.
That's one. We need two more. I
right.
Think is what he
right.
Said.
Yeah. Listen, I mean, be greedy. I just, the likelihood of that happening in an NFL game, I still argue with, you know, that's something where I'm saying, okay, you've got to understand your opponent might not have that happen.
Like, yeah, but that was some old Lovie Smith stuff, though,
mm-hmm. uh-huh.
Layla. Like, that was the win, the turnover battle. And if you get, if you're plus three, then you have a 92% chance of winning the game.
No doubt. Absolutely. But you also have to look into likelihoods of your opponents, too. Like, just because you're a pitcher hitting your spots doesn't mean you're always throwing at 99. You know, if you throw at 97 and you hit your spot, that ball might be out of the yard.
I'm just saying that I think that it's probably the goal. Like, I think they walk in with, because that was the goal for Lovey's teams. And, you know, it's a similar defense, if not the same. Their goal was to be plus three. And then he made mention of it in the post game where he was saying we were plus one in turnover. So I think that's what he meant by that. Like, I think it was him trying to be like, hey, our goal every game is that we are plus three. So we got to keep making plays.
Yeah.
Defensively. We got to keep trying to turn people over.
Nothing wrong with that, in my opinion. And I also like the fact that he's blitzed more. Like, I mean, there's a lot we can discuss. Like, even just what we saw on Saturday with the creative blitzing, Kyler Gordon being the recipient, I loved it all.
Here's Eberflus on the plan for Thursday.
The majority of the starters will not play in that game. We feel really good about our process, the plan that we've had. In terms of the range of plays for certain players, the range of competitive reps, we feel really good about that with our joint practices and going ones on ones the entire time. So we feel really good where we are there. And again, we got a day to day that's a padded practice stud, and we're going to get after it pretty good today on first, second, and third down. And it's going to be a good practice today.
What's the focus of the plan when you have 20-some days between Thursday night and the starters obviously not playing and then week one?
It's really three things. You know, number one is to stay in condition. You know, we got to stay in condition because we practice really hard and, you know, we got to maintain that conditioning level. That's got to be the key. Maintain your fundamentals through drill work, through teamwork. That's got to stay sharp because that's what wins football games, you know, and then stay healthy. And that's really getting to the first game the best way we can. And we have a really good plan in place for that. I know it's a lot longer time than it's been in the past, but we feel really good about the process.
And we'll get to be watching it on one screen of a certain size, I'm sure, at the world's largest sports book at Circa.
Next up, we have to watch it at the sports book with other sports.
And it shouldn't be an issue because it's a national game, so you guys shouldn't have an issue finding it.
Oh, good.
Oh, good. That means I can probably watch it at the pool, too. Darn. It's going to be tough.
Mike Florio going to join us next to talk NFL and Bears on the Score.
Dan Bernstein, Lawrence Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
How do you guys as a defense stay sharp, knowing that you're probably not playing in Kansas City, but you've got 3 weeks left?
Who said we're not playing in Kansas City? That's what they said.
Okay. Got to find out somehow. Sometimes you find out from reporters. That's Tez, the Tez Effect, the Beast, Montez Sweat. He's got so many nicknames. And I guess Matt Eberflus is able to just, you know, wield the magic scepter and keep dubbing you with various nicknames whenever he wants. You can change him at any time. Herbie the Love Bug. Okay. Who is that? Who is Herbie the Love Bug? Did he say? Did you know that what player that was?
I didn't.
Was it Khalil Herbert?
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
Oh.
Hey, you guys can ask Matt Eberflus all about his nicknaming on Friday. 1225.
I got a lot of questions for him. A lot of questions. Most of them are stemming from this recent Hard Knocks episode. Some are not, but most of them are. The nickname
what from
thing,
the recent Hard Knocks thing has got you wanting to ask Flusy about.
Ooh. Well, first of all, Lawrence, let me tell you I'm on my last page of my notebook. So that's a new chapter has to begin soon. I think, number one, did you hear him talk about the 48-hour preparation?
Yes.
I'm like, what is that? I need to know more about this. When you say that, what do you mean? I think additionally, I do like that his daughters are in the show because I'm a woman who talks about football. So I would like to ask him about that. The origins of the glow up. I thought that was pretty neat. I'm trying to think of what else that I have for him. I have a separate list. And then I think also, to me, just who he thinks he is this year based on who he was when he started this job. Like, that's a big one for me.
Yeah, I have a question that's kind of parallel to that that last one that you mentioned that I want to talk with him through, because I think that he made a connection with this team when he started calling plays again.
And I also think I would like to explore the balance between being in the weeds like that and being a capable enough CEO.
And Kevin Fishbane wrote a great article talking about Eberflus's happiness of going over tape with players and the teaching aspects. And I also think that that is something that we can build on and discuss with him, because, again, these are all things that are really good, and we haven't really gotten to see them much ourselves until recently. So I feel like all of that is I feel like all of that is worth discussing.
Yeah, the granular tackling stuff about securing the hamstring tackle, about which way to kind of gator roll in a direction of the line of scrimmage, that the physics of it were really interesting. And the way Fishbane described Eberflus getting in the stance and being, we've all been there. We've all been in a coach's office where they can't help themselves. It's what they do. And they start moving you around and say, well, you're over here and your head is here and you can't go over here until this person goes here. And that's because they're coaches. It's by nature.
And did you guys see the point where he's talking about where a foot needed to be pointed in the tackle? Like, I thought that was... Again, this is stuff for us. Like, I know we like talking about this. We find this interesting, but I just wonder how much a typical Hard Knocks viewer does. I can't separate it right now because I love that minutia. I needed to figure out who this team is.
Yeah, and it also gives you a glimpse into the mind of how important some of the technique stuff is, where often, like, we're able to talk about it when we're talking about, like, a receiver where the cut is at 12 and a half, not at 13. And the difference, that half yard doesn't seem like it makes a world of difference, but considering the timing mechanism of the play, it could make the difference between a catch out of bounds for a first down or a pick six going the other way. So learning like what some of those small things are, I think is a great thing.
Oh, it's like what Olin Krutz does often when he breaks down offensive line play or gives you some video tips on Twitter, where he'll say, look at where this guard's head is on this zone block, or look at what the center is being asked to do to come across a gap and reach block, and showing you that if this is ill-timed, everything breaks down.
Well, and also go back to the tape where, unfortunately, you know, they get eaten up by Cleveland in the fourth quarter. But he says, well, there's supposed to be an interception on that play. That brain we got to see in this last episode, like why he's saying that. You saw he like called for the interception and he knew what would happen if everybody was in their spots.
That's one. We need two more.
Right. Yeah. Listen, I mean, be greedy. The likelihood of that happening in an NFL game, I still argue with, you know, that's something where I'm saying, okay, you've got to understand your opponent might not have that happen.
Like, yeah, but that was some old Lovie Smith stuff though. Mm-hmm. Layla. Uh-huh. Like that was the win, the turnover battle. And if you're plus three, then you have a 92% chance of winning the game.
No doubt. Absolutely. But you also have to look into likelihoods of your opponents, too. Like, just because you're a pitcher hitting your spots doesn't mean you're always throwing at 99. You know, if you throw at 97 and you hit your spot, that ball might be out of the yard.
I'm just saying that I think that it's probably the goal. Like, I think they walk in with, because that was the goal for Lovie's teams. And, you know, it's a similar defense, if not the same. Their goal was to be plus three. And then he made mention of it in the post game where he was saying we were plus one in turnover. So I think that's what he meant by that. Like, I think it was him trying to be like, hey, our goal every game is that we are plus three. So we got to keep making plays.
Yeah.
Defensively, we got to keep trying to turn people over.
Nothing wrong with that, in my opinion. I also like the fact that he's blitzed more. Like, I mean, there's a lot we can discuss. Like, even just what we saw on Saturday with the creative blitzing, Kyler Gordon being the recipient, I loved it all.
Here's Eberflus on the plan for Thursday.
The majority of the starters will not play in that game. We feel really good about our process, the plan that we've had, in terms of the range of plays for certain players, The range of competitive rep in terms of reps, in terms of competitive reps, we feel really good about that with our joint practices and going ones on ones the entire time. So we feel really good where we are there. And again, we got a day to day that's a padded practice stud, and we're going to get after it pretty good today on first, second, and third down. And it's going to be a good practice today.
What's the focus of the plan when you have 20-some days between Thursday night and the starters obviously not playing and then week one?
It's really three things. You know, number one is to stay in condition. You know, we got to stay in condition because we practice really hard and, you know, we got to maintain that conditioning level. That's got to be the key. Maintain your fundamentals through drill work, through teamwork. That's got to stay sharp because that's what wins football games, you know, and then stay healthy. And that's really to get into the first game the best way we can. And we have a really good plan in place for that. I know it's a lot longer time than it's been in the past, but we feel really good about the process.
And we'll get to be watching it on one screen of a certain size, I'm sure, at the world's largest sports book at Circa.
Next up, we have to watch it at the sports book with other sports.
And it shouldn't be an issue because it's a national game, so you guys shouldn't have an issue finding it.
Oh, good.
Oh, good. That means I can probably watch it at the pool, too. Darn. It's going to be tough.
Mike Florio going to join us next to talk NFL and Bears on the Score.